Well, we're back again, just 48 hours later, with more truths, more hammers, and more common sense. And perhaps we'll go a bit green added into the mix. And not to mention a smattering of humour along the way. And this is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Silver can weigh a ton, just saying. I attended further calls this week on the From Russia We Love book that's now underway. The website upgrades, the positive action group, and some other projects this week, and a lot of other shows. And of course, we had another extra show on Tuesday. I connected much more in the way of dots, and more will come from that show at a later date. Now, with the calls, there was lots of good suggestions being made and promoted of how we expand this coming year, and we will be expanding, and we want more to come in and help your own people to get this running more and take the strain away from the few who are doing. Well, here's a suggestion that all members can do. There are lots of people who do posts on MeWe or Facebook pages, and at some point it was a valid exercise, and still is to a minor point today, of highlighting certain issues. But what if your posts were tailored to be of assistance to the Positive Action Group? So instead of just posting, think of ways the post can be of benefit for the Positive Actions group in terms of using the material to formulate letters of response and or potential groups for our attention. And no, let's not go after Biden or some other supposed figure of importance, because A, they are not important. B, we have no government, and C, it is clickbait and a waste of energy. So if you can find time to research and post, that time can be better spent engaging the Positive Action Group as well. And that way your posts have a potential meaning, and your time researching will be put to better use. That's a far better use of your energy than just posting and waiting for people to make sarcastic, witty or abusive comments plus a stream of emojis. Your post could potentially have a greater impact then. That then is thinking different as part of a collective and not just posting for the sake of it. Now, I have observed further evidence this week that when matched with what has unfolded since last October, heavy downloads in November that still have to be implemented, and the shows that have been written over spans of time are converging into one giant picture of yet another bigger picture will emerge in due course. Well, things are coming at and to me now on an increasing scale in a shortening span of time. Just this week, symbolic dreams of the collapsing old house. It's a sign of the old world decay, and no amount of fixing it will work. Those ensconced in their world now will stay there. And what they are trying to do is they're trying to entice us to go with them. Don't absorb. Don't engage that path, because it's not for you. It is only for them. And that recent dream involved Kim trying to employ me in a building project or a rebuilding project. And Kim wanted to hire me, but the building project was collapsing all around, walls literally falling down. It is not a building to rebuild, just demolish. Now in the dream, Kim actually paid me, which is a first. But I walked out laughing. But what she paid became significant. It was £180. The 180 is for me to flip sides or worlds. That is not going to happen. Your world is ending, and we don't want or need it to go forward. Now, just 8 hours later, I was called to go to a favourite place of mine back in Durango. And while in the forest part, I heard an unknown woman call the name of Kim's daughter, and yet no one was around. I was then called to take some pictures, which means there is something to see beyond the eyesight. I could detect something, but I could not see it or them. And as usual, the sight of greys appeared in the photo, kind of a prerequisite for me and my life. But in the picture was what I can only describe as Pan. The cloven-footed forest entity with a sickle in his hand, ready to attack. Well, the attack failed. And the convergence of thoughts, ideas, shows, plans and events is now getting ever so tighter. You must work on the self. You must protect the self. You must clear, center, ground and shield in that order. You must keep your path. You must social distance their world. Not 6 feet and not even a barge pole length now. It is much wider. You must integrate your shadows, pulling in pieces of you scattered everywhere like a shattered mirror. Remember, I said to you, you are the third person looking at the person looking in the mirror, watching a copy image of itself. And when you see that, that third person is you. It is more of you and what you are. The mirror is the false image and also the copy. Right. So you just love it. A new is coming today. There's always the one participant. Don't think I don't notice, because I do. Right. Let's get into some news. The BBC said, the prospect of a wider war in Ukraine is dreadful to contemplate. If Russia were to invade, thousands could die and many more might flee. The economic cost would be severe, the humanitarian cost devastating. And then they asked, is there a diplomatic way out, an exit from this confrontation that is peaceful and durable? And the BBC went on to listing five ways of preventing war. But I have one more simple solution that includes another five. Stop reading and writing scripts prepared by the Five Eyes groups, because then war talk is over. Not to be outdone, Washington is bracing itself for an exodus of refugees fleeing Ukraine in the event of a Russian incursion. Ooh, the White House has announced. But why are they concerned? How about the focusing on the influx of refugees on our own borders? Many of the whom said refugees are bringing violence, gangland antics, death, and are involved in heinous programs. Why won't you focus on that? And yet more alarming fear-based headlines to deflect from the failing COVID narrative, as more than a dozen countries have urged their citizens to leave Ukraine amid warnings from Western powers that an invasion by Russia could be imminent. The US, UK and Germany are amongst those who told their nationals to leave, and in a phone call, the US mask man Biden warned Putin of the costs of any invasion. Now, for his part, the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said invasion warnings could stoke panic, which he called the best friend of our enemies. And the White House has warned that an invasion could happen at any time and could begin with bombing from the air. Russia characterized such allegations as provocative speculation. But here's a question that should be answered. Will all the governments, media, and agency clowns apologize for their faulty narrative should the Russians not invade by the end of the year? Remember, the stupid Americans have been saying the Russians are coming for the past 65 years. They didn't. And here's another example of interfering where they don't belong, as Biden signed an executive order releasing $7 billion in frozen Afghan reserves to be split between humanitarian efforts for the Afghan people, CIA, and the American Victims of Terrorism, including relatives of 9/11. But Afghanistan had nothing to do with 9/11. So why are they being made to pay? And that is sickly, sugar-coated politics of the worst order. But in a highly unusual move, the convoluted plan is designed to tackle a myriad of legal bottlenecks stemming from the 2001 terrorist attacks and the chaotic end of the 20-year war in Afghanistan, which has ignited a humanitarian and political crisis. It's what they do. But critics warn it could tip Afghanistan's already strained banking system over the edge into systemic failure and deepen a humanitarian crisis that has left millions facing starvation and almost the entire country, 98%, are short of food. It's funny they can get all kinds of weapons in at short notice but can't get food, is it not? And Dr. Shah Mohammed Marabi said, "You're talking about moving towards a total collapse of the banking system, and I think it's a short-sighted view." Mr. Marabi is a long-time member of the bank's board and economic professor at Montgomery College in Maryland. And cash shortages have already led to strict weekly limits on how much of their savings people can withdraw, deepening the economic crisis as inflation soars. Now, in August, the Taliban seized control and the former government collapsed, leaving behind just over $7 billion in central bank assets that were deposited in the US Federal Reserve Bank in, well, I never, New York. And the great question is, why is every country's funds deposited in a New York bank or the Bank of England? Now, as Afghanistan's top officials, including the president and the central bank governor, fled the country, all very Trudeau-like, the Fed froze the account as it said it was unclear who was legally authorized to access the funds. Does anybody ask why they even have them? Now, the Taliban took over the central bank, the Afghanistan Bank, and immediately claimed the right to the money. But under long-standing counter-terrorism sanctions, it is illegal to engage in financial transactions with the organization. Well, whether we like it or not, they are the recognized government, even if they are the CIA. And they said, furthermore, the US does not recognize the Taliban as the legitimate government of Afghanistan, but China does, Russia does, and most importantly, the people of Afghanistan do. And so it is really nobody else's business. Speaking of Mask Man, and people should take note of this piece. It might seem funny in a way, but it's just wrong. Biden mixed up the countries of Afghanistan and Ukraine, despite them being more than 3,000 kilometers apart, in what was the second major geography gaffe by a senior American official in just one day. And he said, there is no way we're ever going to unite Ukraine. I mean, Iraq. I mean, Afghanistan, Biden said in the interview. This is not the first gaffe, and it won't be the last either. And he was not the first either, as Bush Jr. couldn't pinpoint on a map a country that his military were attacking. That was Iraq. But the mental competency levels are beyond low, it seems. And it is a national disgrace and why we are ridiculed around the world. But there is another side to this as well. It is beyond disgraceful for people to put in place a male or female in charge of a supercharged job at age 78. The man should be retired, like everybody else. And to me, it is shameful he is even put in this position on a humanitarian level. But the Biden office and the Department of Justice has been caught opening up the Representative Louis Gohmert's house mail before it reached his office. And one letter was from a Christian missionary, another from a constituent in Texas. Now, no doubt it will go unpunished again. But for anyone else interfering with other people's mail, it is a felony. 18 US code, double squiggly serpent symbol 1701, obstruction of mails generally. Whoever knowingly and willfully obstructs or retards the passage of the mail or any carrier or conveyance carrying the mail shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 6 months or both. It's unbelievable. Black voters are fleeing President Biden in droves, it seems. And the report said it's hard to see a scenario under which they come back anytime soon. Now, Biden's poll numbers have been stunningly bad lately, and the most recent Clown News Network poll has him at 58% of disapproval and just 41% approval. In just December, Biden was 49% approval in the same poll, so he's lost 8%. Now, among those who disapprove of his performance, 56% say the president didn't accomplish anything in the first year of which they approve of. He won't accomplish anything in 4 years, never mind one. And meanwhile, a majority of Democrats don't even want Biden to run again in 2024, with just 48% supporting the idea, which is unheard of after just 1 year in office. Now, two more big numbers to consider. Only 69% of black voters support Biden. And this is significant because 92% of them voted for him in 2020. So he's lost 23% in that. But this is what happens when you vote for the opposition leader after the treasonous media promoted the opposition as a white supremacy candidate. And so the stupid sheep voted against that, all thinking that the new leader will be different. They never are, and they never will. And the key is, just when will the people work that out? Remember, we did a piece early December when Biden was pressed on rising fuel prices. And he said they would go down below $3 a gallon, and in some cases have, he said, which was a lie. Well, 2 months on, they are now higher again. And at which point will people call him out? Fuel prices is another tax on the people that impacts more businesses, creates food poverty, damages the economy, the transportation costs are increased, and also ruins the vacation industry. And yet, what are the government doing to stop these oil barons charging whatever they like? What is the trustee doing to lower gas prices as she promised? Oil's now heading back over $100 a barrel, and that is pure theft, as it costs around $5 to $7 a barrel to produce. And it's just another of their fake values again. Another of their milking the people again, as if the stealth tax called inflation wasn't enough. And the point is, how and why could Venezuela charge their people 3 or 4 years ago 10 cents a gallon until the Bush and CIA junta interfered, when ours, as of this week, was $3.60 a gallon plus? The Fed is about to conduct its annual stress test on the largest US banks, which is measuring their ability to manage events like a drop in real estate and other asset prices coupled with a surge in unemployment while still paying their shareholders dividends for 4 successive quarters. And this year's stress test will feature a 6-point surge in unemployment to 10%. It's way bigger than that anyway. Paired with a 40% collapse in commercial real estate and other asset prices, along with growing corporate bond spreads. And banks will then be graded based on their ability to weather the simulated recession while still making 4 quarters of planned shareholder dividends. The last line says it all. While still paying the shekel-based shareholders their dividends. In reality land, all banks are bankrupt. So why even bother with these fake tests? It's all an illusion game at this point. But is the 40% real estate drop a warning? 2 US senators have raised concerns that the CIA is again spying upon unwitting Americans, and the agency has secretly conducted warrantless surveillance through a newly disclosed program, according to the senators Ron Wyden and Martin Heinrich. And in a letter to intelligence officials, the 2 Democrats call for declassifying details of the program, and government data collection has been the subject of much controversy in the US. Now, officially, the CIA and NSA have foreign surveillance mission. and domestic spying is prohibited by the CIA's 1947 charter. Now, the foreign surveillance is in relation to the Five Eyes group, as they all spy for each other and then share the data amongst each other, which then gets around their country's laws. That's how it works. But in 2013, a program of data collection using extensive internet and phone surveillance by American intelligence groups was disclosed by Edward Snowden, who was a former CIA contractor. And the Washington Post analysis of the Snowden leak found some 90% of those being monitored were ordinary Americans caught in a net the NSA had cast for somebody else. Yeah, right. Now, top officials had until then denied and even lied under oath to Congress that they were knowingly collecting such data. Now, the program known as PRISM was later ruled unlawful by a US court. And the CIA released a declassified report on one of the programs on Thursday, but declined to declassify the other, citing the need to protect sensitive tradecraft methods and operational sources. But Mr. Wyden of Oregon and Mr. Heinrich of New Mexico said by failing to do so, the agency was undermining democratic oversight and posing risks to the long-term credibility of the intelligence community. Long-term credibility of the intelligence community. The usual BS from them then, like the National Security Cover-Up Act rules again. We're going to Bahrain now, and they confirmed on Saturday that an Israeli officer will be posted to the country in the coming weeks, the first time an Israeli officer has ever been stationed in an Arab country with that country's support. Now, the officer will reportedly serve as a liaison to the US Navy, and the appointment of an Israeli officer comes within the framework of arrangements related to an international coalition comprising of more than 34 countries, according to Bahrain's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And the coalition secures freedom of navigation in the territorial waters of the region and protects international trade while also confronting acts of piracy and terrorism in the region. Utterly delusional. Those 34 coalition countries, particularly including the US and Israel, are about as safe and secure as being with NATO or ATON. Message to Bahrain. Have you told your peoples you've sold your country out? Because now there is one cockroach in your midst, others will certainly follow. Finally, some people are cottoning onto the problem, and maybe our From Russia With Love Plus 3 show, The Dutch Connection, made some take notice. As the administrations of about a dozen Dutch universities have reportedly demanded their staff hand over information on their relationships over the past 10 years with a long list of Jewish and Israeli institutions following a request from the Netherlands-based NGO The Rights Forum. Now, the news was reported by the Dutch Jewish media outlet NIW on Thursday. I guess the Dutch, like every other nation, is not allowed to have their own media, it seems. But the request obtained and cited by the paper asks the academic institutions whether they would share documents and information about their dealings with various Jewish entities, including Israeli universities, institutions and companies, as well as contacts with organizations promoting support for the State of Israel. Now, the Rights Forum appeared to be particularly interested in student exchanges that the Dutch universities had with Israeli educational institutions. But the list of Jewish organizations of concern did not stop at that. It also included the US-based Anti-Defamation League, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and even the Dutch government's Office of the National Coordinator for Fighting Anti-Semitism. Now, predictably, you know what happens next. The request sparked an uproar from various Jewish associations in the Netherlands and beyond, and Dutch Chief Rabbi Benjamin Jacobs said, "This reeks of anti-Semitism." "But it comes as no surprise," he said, "given this group's reputation." But just how is asking for data of links between several groups now deemed anti-Semitic? Yet another excuse to wheel out the guilt and shame program again, it seems to me anyway. This story didn't get as much coverage as the Charleston event 2 years ago. Wonder why. A suspect arrested over the car ramming attack against the Freedom Convoy protesters in Winnipeg, Canada, is an Antifa member with a long history of far-left militantism in Manitoba. David Alexander Zegarak allegedly sped off to try and escape after the attack on February the 4th, which injured 4 people. And he ran multiple lights and resisted arrest, and when he was finally caught around 40 minutes later. So who is Zegarak? Well, he was the frontman of Antifa punk band Brat Attack, until a record label dropped the group because of multiple accusations of sexual assault against Zegarak in 2015. And one of the accusers said she was only 13 when he groomed her and also raped her. The same story as Charleston, but only one story brings mass publication and attention. And the question is, who put this guy up to it? Was he another of the CIA payback for your crimes by doing acting work for us, or an MKUltra victim? A multitude of questions too few ask, but it will be interesting if he's even jailed, because that was attempted murder. The following list is a partial list of Canadian officials who are members of the World Economic Forum. The Right Honourable Justin Trudeau. Chrystia Freeland, Deputy PM and Finance Minister and Mayor Watson of Ottawa. Patty Hajou, former Minister of Health, now Minister of Indigenous Services. Marie-Claude Bibeau, Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food. Dr. Helena Jaczek, Minister for Federal Economic Development, Southern Ontario. Catherine McKenna, former Minister of Environment and Infrastructure and Communities. Andrew Scheer, former leader of the Conservative Party. Michelle Rempel. Melanie Joly, Minister of Foreign Affairs. Alicia Goldberg, Assistant Deputy Minister, Strategic Policy, Global Affairs Canada. Francois Philippe Champagne, former Minister of Finance, Jonathan Fried, personal representative of the Prime Minister of Canada to the G20, Coordinator, International Economic Relations and Global Affairs Canada, Peter Van Loan, former Cabinet Minister, former President, Queen's Privy Council for Canada, Susan Fortier, Pierre Elliott Trudeau Foundation, former President, Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council of Canada, Christian Paradis, former Minister of International Development and Public Works, John Baird, former Minister of Foreign Affairs, Scott Bryson, former Minister of Public Works and Government Services, Receiver General of Canada, Renee Maria Tremblay, Senior Counsel to the Supreme Court of Canada. All on the World Economic Forum Group, which I've warned about previously. And so it becomes indicative as to why Canada is employing the fascist Zionist model on its people. I suspect they are looking for change and getting the people to provide the action or reaction for their solution. Governments are bankrupt and too expensive to run. The US government alone costs $14.5 billion per day. And they want their centralized, more streamed form of government that will not include elections. Remember the piece in Clowns in Panic when I highlighted the word decentralizing? They will decentralize the banks, money and government, I said, to then centralize it behind the wall in Israel. And then this came in. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has evoked the Emergency Act for the very first time in Canadian history, citing the threat to the safety order and the economy allegedly posed by the Freedom Convoy truckers and their sympathisers protesting his COVID-19 restrictions. So what is the Emergencies Act? Well, it was adopted in 1988, and the Act authorises the federal government in Ottawa to temporarily claim extraordinary powers in response to an emergency that seriously endangers the lives, health or safety of Canadians and is of such proportions or nature as to exceed the capacity or authority of a province to deal with it. Has it been used before? Well, the Emergency Act had never been invoked before. The Canadian state broadcaster CBC called its invocation on Monday unprecedented. Now, its previous version, the War Measures Act of 1914, had been used three times previously in response to the First World War, the Second World War, and the October Crisis of 1970, when the French-speaking separatists in the province of Quebec abducted a member of parliament. Now, the Prime Minister, or Crime Minister, who invoked it at that point was Pierre Elliott Trudeau, the current PM's father. Like father, like son then. And his story repeats itself again. So the question is this martial law? Well, technically, no. Trudeau himself pointed out there will be no troops in the streets. However, the emergency powers vastly increased the power of the RCMP to act against what the PM called illegal blockades and occupations in specifically designated locations. I will tell you what is illegal, Mr. Trudeau. Costing people their businesses, livelihoods and homes. jabbing people against their will, and subjecting children to physical and mental abuse. That's what's illegal. Now, the powers also grant the government's financial intelligence agency, FinTrack, additional authority over banking, online fundraising, and cryptocurrency transactions. Well, I never. Clowns in panic again? Which measures will be taken? Well, according to Turdo, local police will have more tools to restore order in places where public assemblies have been declared illegal and dangerous, such as outside the Parliament in Ottawa and at the US-Canadian border crossings. And the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, will also be able to enforce provincial and municipal laws where required. In other words, Gestapo and Stasi tactics then, aligned with fascist rhetoric of illegal and dangerous, when in reality, it's your policies that are illegal and dangerous, Mr. Trudeau. Denying the public the right to free speech because your lot are too weak to listen to anything resembling the truth. Now, border crossings and airports have been designated critical areas and will be kept clear of demonstrators. And all of that reveals the influence of the greed-based shekel makers. Protect their businesses. The government is also empowered to commandeer the services of towing companies to remove the big rigs used by protesters. Commandeer? But what if the towing companies don't wish to do it? Will you shut them down as well? And the government has told banks to review their relationships with anyone involved with the protests and freeze their assets without a court order. Remember the clowns in panic? They will just press delete. It's full-on fascist Zionism, measure that. But perhaps it will show the public of how they wish to act with their one-world government and digital-only currency. It's a case of agree with us, or we suspend, or do we will delete your account. That's what they're telling you. Now, FinTrack's authority over cryptocurrency translations, crowdfunding platforms and payment service providers has been expanded under laws against money laundering and terrorist financing. Yeah, really? Well, if that's the case then, that will be good, because they will go after the Soros Foundation then, won't they? And perhaps they'll go after all the major banks, as all of them are money laundering. How long will the Emergency Act last? Well, it went into effect on Monday afternoon and is initially supposed to be in effect for 30 days, though it could be extended. And under the law, the Parliament must approve the declaration of emergency within 7 days. It would be revoked if either House votes against it. Just as I predicted. Welcome, Canada, to this. Tomorrow belongs to us. Medical related news, and there's a mixture of good news and outright Zionism in today's reports. and good news on restrictions in other places are now unfolding. Manitoba in Canada has announced they will end all restrictions, including COVID passports and face masks, on the 15th of March. German officials are set to end the majority of the remaining government's COVID restrictions in March also, amid decreasing coronavirus infections, according to a draft plan on Monday. Broad restrictions of social, cultural and economic life should be gradually lifted by the start of spring on March 20th, 2022, the draft document suggested. Now, it was set to be formally approved by federal and state leaders on Wednesday. Austria chimed in and they added to the mix as well of removing restrictions. But one country won't. Well, they're not just one country, there's a couple of other countries, and the ones that won't should become indicative. But a massive chain of vehicles has jammed up traffic in Jerusalem as thousands of Israelis took to the streets to protest the country's coronavirus restrictions following the Freedom Convoy in Canada's capital over ongoing vaccine requirements there. And long lines of cars could be seen heading for Jerusalem last Monday, reportedly from cities across Israel, in footage that has been circulating on social media. 30,000 vehicles and 40 convoys from 40 cities across Israel converge into one United Israel Freedom Convoy. Awful lot of mention of 40 with that. And they all headed into Jerusalem to protest the what they claimed was undemocratic COVID restrictions. There was no general chance of the media posting that. Too many restrictions, and what they won't post, we will. Authorities in New Zealand have been playing Barry Manilow's greatest hits in an attempt to dislodge protesters camped outside the Parliament building. Songs by the US singer are being played on a 15-minute loop, better than 4 years, I suppose, along with the Spanish dance tune Macarena. And the demonstrators, who are angry at the COVID-19 vaccine mandates, responded by playing songs such as Twisted Sister's We're Not Gonna Take It. Indeed. Now, that might seem a lot of, like, horseplay and general fun, that, just to annoy people. You would be wrong to think that. That is MK Ultra tactics. Is that what they are reduced to doing now? Police have intercepted hundreds of vehicles trying to enter Paris as part of a protest against France's coronavirus regulations, and tear gas was fired at the demonstrators who defied an order banning the Freedom Convoy. And the Interior Minister, Gerald Darmanin, said that more than 300 tickets had been handed out and 54 people had been arrested. Now, Austria and Belgium have also banned such convoys from entering their capitals, with similar demonstrations also emerging in Australia, New Zealand and the Netherlands. Banning free speech, oh my. The weak ones are struggling, aren't they? That's what it tells you. It has been a long time coming, but we now have them where we want them. Exposing them into the light and forcing them to use vast resources and energy to keep hold of their failing lie. And it is failing. China has a population, allegedly, I don't believe it, for 1 minute, of 1.45 billion people. And as of last August, China had administered 2 billion COVID vaccine shots in the country. But did you know not a single person in China was given an mRNA COVID vaccine? Oops. Now, in July 2021, China announced it may be time, it said, to work on an mRNA vaccine. But as of December 2021, there was still no word on when China would start administering their own mRNA vaccines. Why China? The billion people left that has been mentioned, half of them would be come from China and Japan. Or so they think. The French clown president Emmanuel Macron refused a Russian COVID test ahead of his meeting with Russia's Putin, the Kremlin has confirmed, and the test required a health protocol that was unacceptable and did not fit in with the French leader's schedule, according to a French source. And it follows reports that Macron refused the PCR test over fears that the Russians would get hold of his DNA, and the leader subsequently held a socially distanced meeting on Monday. Yeah, it was a table that was about 20 foot long. But the questions that arise from this. So everyone else has to take the test, apart from those who make up these rules, is what he's saying. But he refused in case the Russians get hold of his DNA. Oh my, the implications of that terminology. And are they saying those PCR tests were all actually DNA testing kits? Democratic California officials have introduced a bill which will force businesses to require their employees to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 or face fines and other penalties. And the California State Assemblywoman, Buffy Wicks, introduced the bill on Thursday alongside fellow Democratic Assembly members Cecilia Aguiar, Curry, Evan Lowe and Ikala Weber. And this bill would require an employer to require each person who is an employee or independent contractor and who is eligible to receive the COVID-19 vaccine to show proof to the employer or an authorized agent thereof that the person has been vaccinated against COVID-19, the bill has proposed, exempting only those with a medical condition or sincerely held religious belief that would prevent them from getting vaccinated. Question: how is it when many other places this scandemic is being closed down? Both Israel, New York and California are ramping it up. Something the people of both states need to seriously ask the question and demand answers as to why. The Hershey Company is firing all its unvaccinated employees, confirming that it's an evil corporation that denies faith-based exemptions from deadly vaccines, according to Kim Durham, who is a payment analyst and sourcing buyer. She said, "I really thought I'd be okay. I thought you cannot question my faith. Nobody can question that." Oh dear. Perhaps she should question her faith and her participation in it herself, because it doesn't work. Now, Durham asked for a religious exemption in August and assumed she would get it. I thought this was behind me until September, when I met with a human resources representative. Human resources being the operative words. And it turned out it was a bit of an interrogation on your religious beliefs, she said. They twisted your words and tried to put words in your mouth. And it was terrible. I was asked such personal questions that had nothing to do with religion. And she was shocked when in November she received word that her request for a religious exemption had been denied. And everyone interviewed mentioned being troubled by similar questions during these meetings, usually held with an immediate supervisor and someone from HR. They asked, have you ever been vaccinated? Are your children vaccinated? How do you protect yourself when you leave your home? How often do you go to church? Do you take Tylenol, ibuprofen, Tums or Midol? Perhaps those should be avoided. So the Hershey Company, which sells low-grade processed sugar-filled candy bars that promotes diabetes and obesity, is now interrogating employees over whether they take Tums. And if they take Tums, they're not allowed to object to a spike protein mRNA injections. As for Hershey's, quite why people buy their shit is beyond me. Their chocolate tastes like soap and smells like vomit. Yes, my MeWe Jif flavour vomit. Time to boycott them, methinks. We're going to Ireland now. More than 500,000 COVID-19 vaccines expired between Christmas and the end of January, with health officials expecting tens of thousands more to go out of date this month. Oops. And what this reveals is just how wrong their forecasts were. Perhaps they went to Johns Hopkins for them. And not just the quantity of vaccines needed, but the threat that the relatively harmless coronavirus itself posed. But they said there has been a lower uptake amongst younger people. Good stuff. Because Omicron, Marduk, has proven to be less severe strain of the virus. And the cabinet was told last month that demand for booster vaccines had dropped amongst the younger age groups, with between 40 and 66% uptake of the booster amongst those 18 to 49. Now, the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, suggested they would make them available to developing countries. Just like the pharma giants then, repackaging out-of-date drugs and then selling them as new to largely African countries. Question for the Irish people. Who will be held accountable for the gross overspend, all of which the Irish people will have to fund? ?50% for the benefit of Johns Hopkins people, that's half, of trial members didn't develop COVID even when the virus was dripped directly into their noses. Oops. But the UK newspaper, The Guardian, turned it into some sort of horror story. Exposure to one nasal droplet, enough for COVID infection, was the headline. But their opening statement of one nasal drop, enough for COVID infection, could equally have been one nasal drop, not enough for COVID infection, given almost half of the study participants did not become infected, even though they had the virus literally dropped right into their noses. But the fear program sells and formulates opinion with fake headlines. Now, halfway through the article, the discerning reader might notice that only half of those exposed to one nasal droplet actually became infected. But of course, the Guardian and the mainstream media knows that most readers don't make it that far. They just post the headline. Now, the article is about an interesting human challenge study that was conducted in the UK on 36 young healthy volunteers, or retards if you ask me, between the ages of 18 and 29, none of whom had evidence of prior COVID infection or vaccination, and they all submitted to having wild type SARS-CoV-2 intranasally inoculated and were then placed in quarantine with constant medical monitoring, including regular PCR and lateral flow testing. Now, after excluding two trial participants who became seropositive after screening, the results were that 18 volunteers, 53%, became infected and 16 did not. Now, the viral load in those who became infected rose steeply, peaking at around 5 days post-inoculation. And viable virus was recoverable from the nose up to 10 days post-inoculation, however, meaning that the volunteers could still transmit the virus to others until that point. No, they can't. But what it did reveal is not one of the 34 who completed the trial became seriously ill, and nor were any adverse events recorded. But 12 people developed issues with taste and smell, all of which means COVID is no worse than a common cold. And a common cold has created worldwide lunacy. And it's no wonder the ETs and MTs consider us a backward species. A little known story that garnered almost no attention in the corporate media is the Dutch insurer Aegon revealed its third quarter 2021 life insurance payouts had skyrocketed 258% compared to the third quarter 2020 payouts. The difference, of course, is found in COVID vaccines. Now, in 2020, vaccines weren't yet available, so payouts for Aegon only reached 31 million. But after three quarters of aggressive vaccinations throughout 2021, the death benefit payouts hit 111 million, 80 million more, which is an increase of 258%. Now, the US insurers MetLife and Prudential Financial also said life insurance claims rose, and South Africa's Old Mutual used up more of its pandemic provisions to pay claims, and reinsurer Munich Re raised its 2021 estimate of COVID-19 life and health claims to €600 million, up from €400 million. And insurance companies are now slowly coming to realise the truth about COVID vaccines, even as the complicit, murderous mainstream media tries to cover it up, the accelerating deaths. Now, the death signals now emerging in the finances of insurance companies can't simply be swept under the rug. And given that the 258% increase was recorded for the third quarter of 2021, it begs the obvious question, how much worse will this be for the fourth quarter of 2021 or the first quarter of 2022? Now, on any normal pre-COVID day in America, about 7,700 people die. But if those deaths rise by 100%, that means an extra 7,700 people are dying each day. Multiply that over 1 year and it's an additional 2.8 million deaths. And that's just for a 100% increase in deaths, when Aegon is reporting 258% increase in payouts on life insurance policies. Now, although Aegon doesn't insure the entire country, obviously this data point should be raising alarms amongst those people paying attention. And if we start to consistently see something like a 200% increase in all-out and all-cause mortality, that would mean an extra 15,000 plus people are dying each day in America. And in essence, that's a vaccine holocaust playing out in real time. And truth be told, we're probably at that point right now. The data sets just haven't caught up yet with the reality of what's happening as of February 2022. Cancer death rates have almost certainly doubled in 2021 and are headed for even higher numbers in 2022. But the cancer industry, which is dominated by pharma interests, will of course bury the numbers as long as possible to avoid anyone asking any questions of why so many people are dying from cancer all of a sudden. And the obvious answer is, it's the mRNA vaccines. Remember what it said on the commandments of the Georgia Guidestones. Be not a cancer upon this earth. Now, Israel, at 96.2% vaccination rate across the population, is now leading the world in COVID cases per capita. And this proves the vaccine has the opposite effect that we were promised in the name of science. In fact, the more a country vaccinates its people, the higher COVID cases rise. Indeed, I guess many others are now catching up to the warnings and facts I gave back in 2020 and went deeper again in early 2021. Remember, Trump brought you that. And yet stupid people still want him back in office. Please spare me the 4 or 5D chess game, because it's all bollocks. A chess game at that level, neither we the people or politicians are on the board. Ponder long on that fact, because you know what? It's true. All that shit that they've thrown at us, and we're all still here. Remember that. Some other pieces, and one of three exposés, I think. We mentioned Room 101 in Tuesday's show, amongst many other things. And lo and behold, on the Illuminati card game, It has a card that is significant. And the card says, Truckers Local 1-on-1 on Strike. Masons begin their journey in Room 101. George Orwell in 1984 describes Room 101 as a torture chamber in the Ministry of Love, where prisoners are subjected to their own worst nightmares, fears and phobias. And yes, your nightmares, fears and phobias in Canada came true. But 101 is binary for 5, which is V, Roman numerically. V for victory, but victory for whom? 5 eyes, 5 Anunnaki, 5 factions, 5 is a V. Who or what is V? And so were the truckers a deliberate plot to enact emergency powers? Well, given he, Turdo, enacted them after the last of the truckers left, there's your answer. I came across an absolute scandal taking place in a UK hospital this week, sadly where my mother resides at the moment, and it literally defied belief, and the levels of greed is sickening. And I'm going to name them. The Southport and Formby Hospital is charging £7.90 a day, $9-$10, for access to the television. £7.90 to watch the television per day. $10 a day to watch that shit. Who approved that? And why didn't the people complain against it? So a 1 week stay in hospital with a TV is £55.30 or $72. It's just staggering. And so much for the NHS being free. It's not free, as the workers pay 13% of their wages each week towards it. This next part is dominated by division programs, and it needs to be highlighted so we can stop it. But there was a report on Antifa conducted by a team of researchers that analysed Black Lives Matter and Antifa protests that found out that Antifa's presence at such events greatly increased the risk of violence. No shit, Sherlock. It is predisposed, is why, coordinated by think tanks, Jewish elite foundations, and also agencies. But two sociology academics at Penn State analysed data on the 2020 civil unrest and concluded the presence of Antifa at an event made violence much more likely. And the research found that the Antifa's appearance at racial justice protests saw higher numbers of injuries and property damages than protests where they didn't appear. Just like the guy running people over we mentioned earlier. And the post-millennials editor-at-large Andy Ngo, whose investigative reporting on Antifa had made international headlines, said, "They have found out what I did, that Antifa's presence is the biggest predicator for violence." It's all prearranged is why, and why I'm not wholly in favour of protests. They have become breeding grounds for agitators, game players and LARPs. Throw in undercover police and agents, and it's a recipe for not only trouble but disaster. And it's all designed to create incidents at the events, and then they use the media to discredit all protesters. That is how it works. Remember last week with the Canadian convoy, the waving swastikas and the Confederate flag? Find the pattern, it always repeats. Oh dear. This one literally, I thought it was humorous, but it's literally the most stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And that's saying something. But just when you thought it was safe and common sense has begun to prevail, their world of the lunatic and bizarre goes to greater lengths of stupidity. A pronoun guide intended to educate Bristol University staff on gender inclusion has divided opinion due to references to cat gender and emoji self. And the university published this guide with links to sources stating that some people may identify as felines and others could use emoji self pronouns, which refers to the use of emojis to express a pronoun, which can be gender neutral. And according to the LGBTA, I don't know what the A stands for, they just seem to add letters by the week, perhaps it's asshole, I don't know. The guide linked out to someone who is cat gender may use Nia or Nian, N-Y-A, N-Y-A-N, pronouns. Nia, Nian means meow in Japanese. Now, cat gender is also described as someone who strongly identifies with spies or other types of feline spies, or experiences delusions relating to being a spy or other type of feline spy. And I thought cat gender just meant you had a pussy. And as Molly Slocum said, can I stroke your pussy? You can't make this shit up. Now, reactions to this guide have ranged from confused to outraged, with some referring to it as beyond satire and embarrassing, and the trans campaigner Debbie Hayton has sarcastically tweeted that she'll be using an eye roll and angry emojis for emoji self pronouns. And she said it brings the whole concept of being transsexual and transitioning into society into disrepute, and we didn't ask for this. Well, you did. You got duped. And she said, pronouns are there to describe what we see and what we know. Well, given you don't see anything and you don't know anything, you won't be making any pronouns then. Now, the links and mentions of cat gender and emoji self have since been removed from the guide, and neo pronouns such as Z, Zer, and Zers are also referred to in the guide, which are singular third-person pronouns that would be used instead of they or them and are not currently recognised in the language that they're used in. Oh dear. And this is what they are educating our children with. But it didn't end there. It's emoji week. Because another woke salad attempt to talk shit and throw the racism card where it is not only not wanted, but goes to such ridiculous lengths to reaffirm racism itself and then create more issues where there is none. As a Washington-based national public radio was ridiculed on Wednesday after it published an article which analysed what skin colour emojis were ethical for various races to use. And the article titled, "Which Skin Colour Emoji Should You Use?" And they said the answer can be more complex than you think. No, it's not. And it featured interviews with people of various races who discussed the racial justice components of cartoon emojis and whether it was okay for white people to use dark-skinned or neutral yellow characters. And some white people, they say, may choose the yellow thumbs-up emoji because it feels neutral. But some academics argue opting out of the white thumbs-up emoji signals a lack of awareness about white privilege, akin to society associating whiteness with being raceless, the article stated.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing.
There is no white emoji because the computer screen background is white and it would be lost. They went on. An emoji brings up white privilege, and these people have completely lost even their few brain cells they have had left. What type of complete jackass would go on a show to discuss emojis? Seriously. And it was noted in the piece, however, that some white people purposely use dark skin emojis in overwhelmingly white spaces to even the playing field. No, they don't. They click on it because they feel like it. Echoes of the Israel Cohen speech, and black people need to consider that they are being used as pawns getting involved in this program. The Georgetown University professors Terence Johnson and Jax Berlenblau co-teach a course that explores the long and complex relation between African Americans and Jewish Americans. And their years of research and teaching together resulted in the book Blacks and Jews in America, An Invitation to Dialogue, it said. Is that not racist in and of itself, given you're leaving out at least three of the colours? Perhaps not. And the work, which features long-form essays and numerous pieces in which the scholars interview one another, probes a variety of hot-button issues. And these include Jewish racism, black anti-Semitism, Afro-Judaism, the Black Jewish Civil Rights Alliance of the 1960s, and the strains placed on these communities by the resurgence of the white Christian nationalism. And they said all of these topics have been especially relevant in the past few weeks as voting rights in the United States comes under assault and controversy engulfs ABC's The View and its host, Whoopi Goldberg. Just like the critical race theory, the transgenderism courses, all are designed to promote one thing: division. And it's time people saw through that illusion. But Biden stepped in to add more to the mix and has condemned a Florida bill that would ban discussion of sexual orientation in primary schools and described it as hateful to LGBT students. Is he? Has he asked all of them? And who made him or any other politician a judge of a whole people's emotions? But the governor, Ron DeSantis, has signalled his backing for the measure and appears to have enough support to pass it through the state's Republican-led legislature. But activists have dubbed it the Don't Say Gay Bill and warn it will stigmatise LGBT people and issues by not talking about it. But its proponents say the legislation is about protecting parental rights. And a proposal was introduced in the State House of Representatives last month, and an identical version advanced in the State Senate on Tuesday. Now, in a Twitter message to the LGBT community, especially the kids who will be impacted by this hateful bill, Mr. Biden vowed to continue to fight for the protections and safety you deserve. Seriously. The problem with this whole program is, if you wish to be accepted into society, then the need then is to blend into the background of that culture, not waving flags and flaunting yourself. The people promoting and shouting "look at me" are exhibitionists and do the LGBT groups no favours whatsoever. But to give you an example, because you have to balance things out, do heterosexual people go around having protests stating, "Hello, I'm heterosexual"? No. Does the most marginalized group do that? No. Because the most marginalized group is the white, male, and heterosexual group, bar none. There is no support groups for any of those three categories. None. The answer is no. None. The question is why. You have this in the social services. There's female groups, there's black groups, Chinese, transgendered, gay and lesbian groups. But as I pointed out, where is the white, male and heterosexual support groups? I was labelled racist and sexist. Well, they can label me whatever they like. I don't give a shit, because it's the truth. And it's also indicative. But continuing with our lightning theme of recent months, here is another supporting story, but it also ends with people doing something to fix things themselves. 2,500 Indians lose their lives to lightning every year, and lightning strikes have killed more than 100,000 people in the country between 1967 and 2019, according to official data. And this is more than a third of fatalities caused by natural hazards during the period. Now, survivors might have to live with symptoms such as weakness, dizziness and memory loss, but the number of strikes has also risen sharply. Now, India recorded more than 18 million lightning strikes between April 2020 and March 2021, according to a study by Climate Resilient Observing Systems Promotion Council. And this was a 34% rise over a similar period during the previous year. Now, satellite data gathered by the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology also shows strikes has increased rapidly between 1995 and 2014. Although half a dozen states recorded the bulk of the strikes, these three states, Odisha, Jharkhand and West Bengal accounted for 70% of the deaths. And they said men working in farms are most vulnerable. Tribes people who farm, fish and forage for a living are especially vulnerable. A sad story. But the villagers themselves fought back and decided to make conductors themselves out of the sparse materials available to them. And to make these conductors, the villagers used second-hand bicycle wheels, bamboo and metallic wires. And then the rim is fixed on the top of a bamboo pole, sometimes up to 30 foot high, which is then strapped to buildings, mainly community centres and local schools. And the conductor then makes sure that the electricity generated will pass to the earth without causing any harm. And a lightning resilient India campaign. And that campaign has cut lightning deaths by 60% in some states. Good stuff. But what does it teach us? It teaches the power of people working as a collective to fix their own problems. And that should be noted by and for RTBC groups. This is what the communal gatherings are all about, us being self-sufficient. Here's the first expose, but first a news report which goes into the full report. Prince Andrew and Virginia Giuffre, who accused the royal of sexual abuse, have reached an out-of-court settlement. And according to court documents filed Tuesday, Andrew will donate his funds to Giuffre's charity in support of victims of sexual assault. But the amount was not disclosed. And Andrew sent a message that he never intended to malign Ms. Giuffre's character, and he accepts that she has suffered both as an established victim of abuse and as a result of unfair public attacks. And the documents also say Prince Andrew regrets his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein, who introduced him to Giuffre. All too predictable. But the victim is no longer a victim. She's just victimised all the other children who have suffered as sexual abuse. And Giuffre, in my opinion, will be seen now as the girl who sold out for the money. And all the children who have suffered under these paedophile abusers. Giuffre is no better than the pedos, in my opinion. Now, documents obtained under the Freedom of Information Act laws by RT Investigative Unit, The Detail, have included startling records revealing how the US Bureau of Prisons moved to shut down any and all public debate about the cause of Jeffrey Epstein's death. Now, along the way, the evidence was distorted, material facts ignored, and key anomalies unexplored and also unpublicised. And after being found dead, allegedly, in a cell at the Metropolitan Correction Centre on August 10th, 2019, the records show that the Bureau issued statements to journalists and Epstein's family categorically stating he'd committed suicide. But the result was international news outlets universally and unquestionably reporting that Epstein had taken his own life from the word go, despite the chief medical examiner, Barbara Sampson, having reached no conclusion at that time. And she made it clear in a statement the next day that the investigation was still open and ongoing. That is classic media tactics. Like I mentioned earlier, get the statement out and repeat it. Ignoring any sort of journalistic questioning, and the bot people have their story to repeat. But it was not until August 16th that Sampson publicly declared Epstein's death had been a suicide. But the ruling was contested by leading forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Barden, who had been hired by the billionaire's brother to monitor the autopsy process. And speaking to the Miami Herald 2 months later, he charged that the autopsy did not support suicide and that the pathologist who conducted it had recorded this. Oops. But then Dr. Sampson changed it a week later, the manner of death to suicide. And his brother's been trying to find out why that changed. So what was all the evidence? Well, since when have the authorities or treasonous media ever concerned themselves with evidence to back their claims? Because clearly the Israeli junta and the DNC criminals leaned heavily on Dr. Sampson to change his or her report. No clarity on these questions has been forthcoming in the years since, although one rationale for the apparent Volta face may have been a shock Washington Post report a day prior to Sampson's announcement. What sources familiar with the autopsy told the paper that the process had revealed several bones in Epstein's neck, including the hyoid, were broken. And such breakages are more common in victims of homicide by strangulation than hanging. And another explanation may be the then ongoing psychological reconstruction of Epstein's death, compiled by Robert Nagel, who is the Bureau of Prisons National Suicide Prevention Coordinator. And files that were released by the Bureau record how Nagel, whose name is redacted in the files, arrived at the Metropolitan Correctional Center on the morning of August 13th, 3 days later, to commence his investigation. And in his resultant report, Nagel noted that a video of an unspecified nature related to the significant incident was confiscated by the FBI prior to the review being initiated. And he also said he'd been unable to conduct formal interviews with prison staff, said to avoid interference with pending investigations by the Justice Department, and that much of the information typically gathered in psychological reconstructions was also not made available. And so what that reveals is the FBI and the Justice Department were involved in the cover-up as well, it seems. And he said these constraints severely limited the ability to establish accurate timelines, confirmed subjective reports, established converging and diverging lines of facts, or discover new areas of inquiry, Nagel wrote. For example, he said he was quite amazingly unable to piece together a detailed description of what the officers found when they discovered Epstein, as they did not write memorandums and could not be interviewed. Furthermore, as no pre-sentence report on Epstein had been completed prior to his death, numerous sections of the reconstruction, such as a review of the inmate's social history, were avowedly incomplete in their appraisal. But still, despite this glaring lack of hard evidence, the document ruled conclusively that Epstein had indeed committed suicide. but his decision was attributed to being unable to sleep due to an inability to tolerate the noise of a prison, plus the recent unsealing of thousands of records related to his 2008 conviction on child sex offences and the prospect of spending the rest of his life in prison. All of which is sound enough reasoning, and one might think, though, in building his case, Nagel drew repeated attention to Epstein, who declared himself on several occasions to be a coward. And in the weeks prior to his alleged suicide, as indicative of suicidal intent. And it's certainly true the prisoner was recorded making such statements, he said, but explicitly in the context of denying any intention or even ability to kill himself. In the psychological assessment, it said, he is not the type who likes pain or would ever attempt to harm himself. He does not even like when he has to give blood. And it was said that this can only be considered a staggeringly dishonest inversion of Epstein's comments, although Nagel's manipulations went unremarked upon in an internal review of the reconstruction by the Metropolitan Correctional Centre warden Marty Lycon Vitale. But nonetheless, in a section marked documentation accuracy, she took aim at the failure of officials to log an incident report in a timely fashion and seemingly submitting conflicting reports on the same incident. She said professional responsibility requires taking into account multiple descriptions of an incident as noted in your response. However, when discrepancies exist, these should be compiled and noted in documentation to decrease the likelihood of conflicting conclusions, she wrote. And she said preconceived notions challenge the ability to remain open about alternative explanations. And then she also issued a directive to please develop and provide local training for all staff that at a minimum reviews the time frame for writing incident reports and offers guidance when there is not clear evidence of an infraction. Why wasn't that in place prior? Oh, these people just lie through the teeth. You know how much time police reports takes up. They spend half the time writing out reports. Are they saying the prison service doesn't have that? I doubt it. And while the specific episode criticised by Lycon Vitale is entirely redacted, one can affirm that this section refers to the bizarre facts documented by the detail in the first instalment of the investigative series. Now, Marty Lycon Vitale quit the Metropolitan Correction Centre just 4 months after the Epstein event. Well, I never. And in brief, the initial incident report on Epstein's alleged suicide on July 23rd, 2019 referred to hanging asphyxiation. But another filed a week later was inexplicably amended to include self-mutilation by laceration, leading him to be being disciplined for a penal code breach. Now, Nagel's reconstruction was received with much delight by the Bureau of Prisoner higher-ups. And an internal email dated August 23rd, the agency's director, Hugh Hurwitz, effusively praised his outstanding work, remarking, "It was unbelievable all you report without the benefit of interviews or video." Indeed, because all of it, which reveals it was a prepared script. And The email is ironic in the extreme, for it truly is unbelievable that a conclusive ruling of suicide could be reached without access to basic and vital evidence. And 4 days earlier, Hurwitz was dismissed from his post by Attorney General William Barr without warning. I wonder why. I wonder if Hurwitz is still alive. Dead people don't talk, you see. And could this be attributable to attempting to shape the narrative on Epstein's death before the Federal Bureau of Investigation or Justice Department Inspector General had completed their respective probes of the case? Well, whatever the truth of the matter, there is another supremely curious feature of the psychological reconstruction never hitherto publicised by any official or any media outlet. But there was a review of financial transactions associated with Epstein's prison stay, and it revealed that one of his attorneys was depositing funds into the commissary account of Efrain Stone Reyes, who was Epstein's final cellmate for unknown reasons. Well, it's not unknown. He was bought off to buy into the story of suicide, is why. And this may account for why Reyes became a person of interest in the FBI's investigation and was duly questioned. And he reportedly feared that cooperating with the Bureau might affect him negatively. But in return for his help, he was moved to a minimum security correctional centre in Queens, New York, which housed high-value cooperating witnesses like the rapper Tekashi 69. How convenient. Or he was let out of jail altogether for cooperating in the conspiracy. Expect Reyes to turn up dead or used as an MKUltra assassin in a public display. That's what happens next. Now, while there, he was reportedly interviewed personally by Attorney General William Barr as part of the Justice Department of the Inspector General's probe, who thanked him for his input. But strangely, though, the department has refused to confirm or deny the claim, while Kerry Kupek, its former spokesperson, charges that it's 100% false. But almost a year to the day later, it was reported that the Inspector General's report on Epstein's death was nearing completion, with the Justice Department investigator suggesting all the team had to do left was dot their I's and cross their T's, and stating they'd be surprised if it's not released in the next 30 days or so. A year to investigate a fake incident. And the report said whether it will shed any light on the countless serious matters raised by the declassified Bureau of Prisons documents is anyone's guess, although in light of the revelation Reyes was in receipt of funds from Epstein's lawyers, the detail has lodged a request with relevant authorities for the seal to be reconsidered. So I did research on Reyes at this point. And right on cue, Reyes died in September 2020, 5 months after being released from prison due to a facility-wide COVID-19 outbreak, purportedly through complications arising from the virus. Seriously. It's all too predictable, that. And yet another agency statistic, it seems. Now, subsequently, his niece, Reyes, told mainstream news outlets her uncle had frequently voiced intense scepticism that the 6-foot-tall Epstein could not have hung himself from the bunk frames in the cell, as they simply weren't tall enough. And in January 2021, federal prosecutors ruled that all records related to Reyes would remain sealed. What a surprise that is. Not. And despite requests for disclosure from journalists due to the potential impact on issues allegedly unrelated to Epstein, they dismissed the request, and authorities listed information concerning the billionaire included in all files related to Reyes, which ran to 2 pages, all of which was redacted. The dastardly plot thickens, and yet another example of all the authorities working together to cover up criminal acts. And we have 17 separate agencies here, when in reality they all work as one corrupt and criminal enterprise. And you can add the FBI and Justice Department and even the government via Barr and Trump to that list. Remember, Trump had good reason to quieten it down, as he, like Ivana and Ivanka, were in Epstein's book and also on the flight log. Right, another expose. 2, in fact. A US spymaster. This is some of the stupidity that goes on. Inadvertently helped the Nazis develop one of the most effective disinformation campaigns of the Second World War by spreading rumours about Hitler's plan for a Where Eagles Dare style Alpine redoubt. According to an historian with access to classified US military records. Now, the myth that the Nazis were amassing weapons and crack units of 100,000 fanatical soldiers in the spring of 1945 for their last stand in the Austro-Bavarian Alps was without any basis in fact, but had a powerful hold on the imagination of Britain and American military leaders who feared it could prolong the war for years. Did you pick up that line in there? Wonder how many did. Isn't it strange? The same figure of 100,000 troops amassed is now the pretext for another war. It is not a coincidence. Now, Thomas Bogart, a German historian at the US Army of Military History in Washington, D.C., argues in a new book that the myth of an Alpine Nazi fortress was not a crucial factor behind American forces abandoning the race to Berlin in favour of a southward push, but was one that the US spycraft had a hand in making. Indeed. And the Nazi leadership first got wind of Allied fears of a mountaintop last stand in 1944, after the SS's intelligence service intercepted a cable sent from the US embassy in Bern, Switzerland. Yet again, more evidence of non-neutrality. But remember, the head of the CIA is in Switzerland. And whilst this was pre-CIA of America, this next passage will confirm their involvement. As Bogart shows in Covert Legions, US Army Intelligence in Germany, 1944-1949, the message had most likely been sent by Alan Dulles, who later was the head of the CIA during the Bay of Pigs invasion fiasco, but at the time the Bern station chief was at the Office of Strategic Services, OSS. And British intelligence had discovered that the special cipher used to secure Dulles's communications had been compromised, but the American spymaster continued to ignore their warnings, driving one irate British agent to despair. And Dulles, who went on to be the first civilian director of the CIA, he wasn't civilian by any means, who is also the longest serving director to date, who oversaw the Iranian coup of 1953, the Guatemalan coup of 1954, who oversaw Project MKUltra, the CIA's mind control program, and who was famously fired by John F. Kennedy, ostensibly for the Bay of Pigs invasion. Nope. Vacuum fighting. But the British agent said, could you report to the fool Dulles, who knows his code was compromised, if he has used that code to report meetings with anyone, the Germans probably identified persons concerned and used them for stuffing disinformation. And the agent vented to his station chief, he swallows too easily, he added. As the British had feared, Goebbels' propaganda ministry would spend the following months building up the myth of a German defence effort in Austria and Bavaria via disinformation and media reports, hoping a sidetracked US military leadership could be drawn into a separate peace talks or even an alliance against the Soviets. Now, Dulles was said to be a very capable case officer who excelled at working with human sources, but when it came to signals intelligence, he was indeed highly negligent, Bogard said. And as Covert Legion shows, Allied forces were extremely susceptible to disinformation campaigns in the final stages of the war, with Field Marshal Montgomery arrested at one point as an imposter by American guards following a rumour that the Germans were planning to impersonate the British commander. And what this shows is how easily the Americans are duped because of preconceived ideas and also brainwashing techniques. And by Americans, I meant the military and agency people. And the problem is, they're too busy running around screaming, the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming, and how bad the Russians are. And yet all of it, or certainly most of it, was due to a few half-wits with badges of dishonour. You know, the American military and the agency top brass are riddled with fear programs. None of them have took the time to analyse or address. Now, after the end of the war, Nazis setting themselves up on snowy mountaintops became a staple of swashbuckling war movies, such as the 1968 Where Eagles Dare, starring Richard Burton and Clint Eastwood. However, some Allied intelligence reports explicitly cited the Alpine Redoubt theory as an argument for an Allied push into southern Germany in 1945. Now, Bogart rejects the idea that it played a crucial part in shaping the Second World War endgame and setting the ground for Cold War tensions with the Soviet Union, as Winston Churchill, Rothschild, later confirmed. But the US decision, listen closely to this, the US decision to not back a British plan for a pencil-like thrust to Berlin likely owed more to the fact that the Red Army, Red is not Russian by the way, it's Zionist, was already within 20 miles of the German capital, while Anglo-American forces were still 300 miles away, he said, and a deal to divide up the city had already been agreed. A deal to divide up the city was already agreed during the war. How nice of them. Of course, the next step was 250,000 flights between America and Germany to set up a new shop for Reich IV. And the author said, my impression is that the US command ultimately didn't really believe in the Alpine Redoubt myth, but may have kept it alive to persuade the British of their overriding strategy. Their overriding strategy. Americans in war don't have strategy. It is just shoot or bomb everything that moves, whether hostile or friendly, as we have found out. An American military having strategy is about as likely as them having common sense. And I'm sorry if that bothered some, but it's true. Next piece. What is green? And you ask that question and people will say, what are you referring to? And green, like many other words of the English language, has double or even triple meanings or multiple meanings, all designed to confuse. And so then the context then becomes all important. Because without the context, what is green garners too many questions in return. Is green to do with gardening, envy, environmentalism, the colour, camouflage, or a programme? And here is the many connotations of green. And maybe that colour will not appear the same after this. And yes, Rochelle, I'm about to ruin something else. Did you know there is no green pigment in green eyes? Like the colour of blue eyes. It's an optical illusion. Its appearance is caused by the combination of an amber or light brown pigmentation of the stroma, given by a low or moderate concentration of melanin, with the blue tone imparted by the Rayleigh scattering of the reflected light. And nobody is brought into the world with green eyes. An infant has one of two eye hues, dark or blue. Now, following birth, cells called melanocytes start to discharge melanin, and the earthly coloured shade in the child's irises. And these beginnings happening since melanocytes respond to light over time. Now, green eyes are most common in Northern and Central Europe. They can also be found in Southern Europe, West Asia, Central Asia, and South Asia. In Iceland, 89% of women and 87% of men have either blue or green, which is not the royal colour, eye colour. And a study of Icelandic and Dutch adults found green eyes to be much more prevalent in women than in men. And among European Americans, green eyes are most common amongst those of recent Celtic and Germanic ancestry, about 16%. Now, animals typically use the colour green as camouflage, blending in with the chlorophyll green of the surrounding environment. Most fish, reptiles, amphibians, and birds appear green because of a reflection of blue light coming through an overlayer of yellow pigment. And the perception of colour can also be affected by the surrounding environment. Now, in ancient Egypt, Green was the symbol of regeneration and rebirth, and of the crops made possible by the annual flooding of the Nile. Paintings on the walls of tombs or on papyrus. Egyptian artists used finely ground malachite mined in the West Sinai and the Eastern Desert, and a paint box with malachite pigment was found inside the tomb of King Tut with the Ankh of Amun. Not Tutankhamun. Tut with the Ankh of Amun. And they also use less expensive green earth pigment, or mixed yellow ochre and blue azurite. Azurite? I wonder why they named a colour after a race of beings that was higher than themselves. Now, to dye fabrics green, they first coloured them yellow with dye made from saffron and then soaked them in blue dye from the roots of the woad plant. And for the ancient Egyptians, green had very positive associations. The hieroglyph for green represented a growing papyrus sprout, showing the close connections between green, vegetation, vigour and growth. But green is an illusion. And so why was green also important to them? In wall paintings, the ruler of the underworld, Osiris, was typically portrayed with a green face, because green was the symbol of good health and rebirth. The underworld. And palettes of green facial makeup made with malachite were found in many tombs. And it was worn by both the living and the dead, particularly around the eyes of Ra, to protect them from evil. And tombs also often contain small green amulets in the shape of scarab beetles made of malachite, which would protect and give vigour to the deceased. Protect the dead, really. Of course, scarab beetles were more of the Egyptian symbolism, remember? And they said it also symbolised the sea, which was called the very green. Except the sea is not green either. And in ancient Greece, green and blue were sometimes considered the same colour, and the same word sometimes described the colour of the sea and the colour of trees. And the philosopher Democritus described two different greens, chloron or pale green and prasinon or leek green. Aristotle considered that green was located midway between black, symbolising the earth, and white, symbolising water. Well, he was wrong then, wasn't he? Because their intentions were black, and quite how white is symbolising water is beyond me. But there you go. However, green was not counted among the four classic colours of Greek painting. It was red, yellow, black and white, and is rarely found in Greek art. Is it a coincidence that those four colours represented the four races here? Now, the Romans had a greater appreciation for the colour green. It was the colour of Venus. Well, I never. The goddess of gardens, vegetables and vineyards. And the Romans made a fine green earth pigment that was widely used in the wall paintings of Pompeii, Herculaneum, Lyon, Vaison, La Romaine and other Roman cities. They also used the pigment verdigris, made by soaking copper plates in fermenting wine. But by the 2nd century AD, the Romans were using green in paintings, mosaics and glass, and there were 10 different words in Latin for varieties of green. And in the Middle Ages and Renaissance, the colour of clothing showed the person's social rank and profession. Red could only be worn by the nobility, brown and grey by peasants, and green by merchants, bankers, and the gentry and their families. The Mona Lisa wears green in her portrait, as does the bride in the Arnold Feeney portrait by Jan van Eyck. Now, in legends, folktales, and films, fairies, dragons, monsters, and the devil are often shown in green. In the Middle Ages, the devil was usually shown as either red, black, or green. Dragons were usually green because they had the heads, claws, and tails of reptiles, which are green. And modern Chinese dragons, they say, are also often green, but unlike European dragons, they are benevolent. They're not. And Chinese dragons traditionally symbolize potent and auspicious powers, particularly control over water, rainfall, hurricane, and floods. And so they were like a modern day harp arrangement then. Just saying. And the dragon is also said to be a symbol of power, strength, and good luck. The emperor of China usually used the dragon as a symbol of his imperial power and strength. No, it was indicative who he operated for. The dragon dance is a popular feature of Chinese festivals also. And in Irish and English folklore, the colour green sometimes was associated with witchcraft and with fairies and spirits. Well, I never. And a type of Irish fairy known as a leprechaun was commonly portrayed wearing a green suit, though before the 20th century he was usually described as wearing a red suit, just like Santa. In theatre and film, green is often connected with monsters and the inhuman, and the earliest films of Frankenstein were in black and white, but the poster for the 1935 version, The Bride of Frankenstein, I didn't realise Pelosi was that old, the monster had a green face. And actor Bela Lugosi wore green-hued makeup for the role of Dracula in the 1927-28 Broadway stage production. And like other common colours, green has several completely opposite associations. And while it is the colour most associated by Europeans and Americans with good health, it is also the colour most often associated with toxicity and poison. Oops. A classic medical-based inversion then. Rather than the cure, they create more sickness to add more poisons and collect more shekels. One ponders, are shekels green? But according to Jewish law, whenever a census of the Jewish people was to be conducted, every person that was counted was required to pay the half shekel for his atonement. Well, I never. A tax on their people was then imposed on all of us, and now, of course, its new symbol is new, N-U, and yet more fake Egyptian god bullshit. But there was a solid foundation for this association in the 19th century. Several popular paints and pigments, notably verdigris, vert de Schweinfurt and vert de Paris, were highly toxic, containing copper or arsenic. And the intoxicating drink absinthe was known as the Green Fairy. You see, alcohol again, alcohol. They call it spirits for a reason. A green tinge in the skin is sometimes associated with nausea and sickness and MeWe GIFs. And the expression green at the gills means appearing sick. And the colour when combined with gold is sometimes seen as representing the fading of youth. And in some Far East cultures, the colour green is used as a symbol of sickness or nausea as well. Green in Europe and the United States is sometimes associated with status and prosperity. And the colour of the cloth in royal counting houses from the late 14th century, later the colour of the cloth of gambling tables, was green. The benches in the House of Commons in the United Kingdom, where the landed gentry sit, or the lords, the psychopaths in other words, are also coloured green. The United States green was connected with the dollar bill since 1861, and the reverse side of the dollar bill has been green. Now, green, it said, was originally chosen because it deterred counterfeiters who tried to use early camera equipment to duplicate banknotes. And also, since the banknotes were thin, the green on the back did not show through and muddle the pictures on the front of the banknote. But green continues to be used because the public now associates it with a strong and stable currency. Not anymore, it isn't. Yet more of the illusion game. Of course, the US issued greenback in what turned out to be a demo run for the virtual implementing of a future program. Because greenbacks were emergency paper currency issued by the United States during the American Civil War that were printed in green on the back. And they were in two forms, demand notes issued in 1861-62 and the United States notes, both of them notes, which means debt, issued in 1862 through 1865, a form of fiat money, and the notes were legal tender for most purposes and carried varying promises of eventual payment in coin, but they were not backed by the existing gold or silver reserves. Green is also considered to be the median colour between light and obscurity, just like the media's use of the green screen then. And one of the more notable uses of this meaning is found in The Wizard of Oz, the Emerald City. And this story is a place where everyone wears tinted glasses that make everything appear green. And according to the populist interpretation of the story, the city's colour is used by the author L. Frank Baum to illustrate the financial system of America in his day, as he lived in a time when America was debating the use of paper money versus gold. The Emerald City, of course, brings up the Emerald Tablets, which brings in Hermes and Thoth, and also Quetzalcoatl. Now, green has played a dominant role in religion. Green is the traditional colour of Islam, which means hidden Isis. And according to tradition, the robe and banner of Muhammad were green, and according to the Quran, those fortunate enough to live in paradise wear green silk robes with their 72 virgins. Muhammad is quoted in a hadith as saying that water, greenery, and a beautiful face were three universally good things. Al-Qidir, known as the Green One, was an important Quranic figure who was said to have met and travelled with Moses. And he was given that name because of his role as a diplomat and negotiator or perhaps that was the colour of his skin. Just saying. Roman Catholic, a more traditional Protestant clergy, wear green vestments at liturgical celebrations during what is called ordinary time. In the Eastern Catholic Church, green is the colour of Pentecost. Green is one of the Christmas colours as well, possibly dating back to pre-Christian times when evergreens were worshipped for their ability to maintain their colour through the winter season. Romans used green holly and evergreen as decorations for their winter solstice celebration called Saturnalia, which eventually evolved into a Christmas celebration. Oops. In Ireland and Scotland, especially, green is used to represent Catholics, while orange is used to represent Protestants. Yes, House of Orange. And it's also shown on the national flag of Ireland. In paganism, green represents abundance, growth, wealth, renewal and balance. Well, we'll ignore them. In magical, with a CK, practices, green is often used to bring money and luck. The dark seducement again. And one figure who shares parallels with the famous deities is the Green Man. Having a green thumb, American English, or green fingers, British English, to be passionate about or talented at gardening. And the expression was popularised beginning in 1925 by a BBC gardening programme. Other green terms brings in green horn, someone who is inexperienced. Green-eyed monster refers to jealousy. Green male, a term used in finance and corporate takeovers. And it refers to the practice of a company paying a high price to buy back shares of its own stock to prevent an unfriendly takeover by another company or businessman. And that originated in the 1980s on Wall Street and originates from the green of dollars. No surprise there then, financial skullduggery. A green room, a room at a theatre where actors rest when not on stage, or a room at a television studio where guests await before going on camera, only to then go into a green screen room. And it originated in the late 17th century from a room of that colour at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane in London. Greenwashing. Environmental activists sometimes use this term to describe the advertising of a company which promotes its positive environmental practices to cover up its environmental destruction. Going green, an expression commonly used to refer to preserving the natural environment and participating in activities such as recycling materials and the colour of environmentalism since 1971. Of course, environmentalism means in green mental. Green around the gills, a description of a person who looks physically ill. Looking green, a description of a person who looks revolted or repulsed. Green cheese originally was that which is new or fresh, late 14th century, and later with reference to colouring, was used for the story told to children that the moon is made of cheese. Stilton or Cheshire. All that mould stuff is probably more indicative. Green light, in figurative sense of permission, is from 1937, and green and red as signals on railways first attested in 1883 as nighttime substitutes for semaphore flags. The Green Beret, originally British Commando, is from 1949. And then we have the curious country called Greenland. Land of the Greens, perhaps, and yet it is almost entirely covered in ice, whilst the next island is entirely green and yet is called Iceland. Omicron is the abyss between the pillars seen in the Babylon, the gate or door of On, O-N. In Egyptian religion, On is the Heliopolis city of the sun, and Osiris the green one. Thus, Omicron is the pale green horse of death. Osiris is the green one, a colour-coded program of Dr. Green or Mengele proportions, or is the green one the Matrix? I will add one more green to finish this piece off, the green pass or passport, so you can enter and pass the port. Yet more water references. Religion, environmentalism, money programs, royals and off-world entities is enough to put anyone off of that colour. And perhaps I've ruined that as well now, or maybe there is a green-related piece in a future epic-style show that overrides it all. We're about to do plenty of that. Final piece. What we have found out these past 2 years as the medical fraternity, which is the virus, and also countries have been played or reacted. So let's end tonight's show with a little bit of fun and wordplay, shall we? The virus went from the computer to the people, courtesy of Microsoft in the head, Bill Gates. The media then made the virus go viral, and so they should be tried for spreading the virus. Non-Factbook was spreading the virus with misinformation. Twitter tweeted further disinformation, and non-fact checkers became the order of the day. YouTube, with the silent J, hooked everyone by the nose, just like the PCR test, whilst Klaus Schwabed you up the nose also. And the WEF became wanton external fuckery. The TV became the transmitted virus. The BBC became the bungling, blithering clowns, and Murdoch is about to go to the sky. Fox, not to be outfoxed, went from Tucker Carlson to Trucker Carlson, and CNN became the clown news network. The hospitalers went on another killing crusade. The NHS became no hospital services, as the Medici N forced more poisons. Bio and tech upgraded the bots, and Johns Hopkins added to the binary coded bots by changing 0.1 to 1.0. Pfizer became Lucifer. Johnson & Johnson became a prime minister and had a party for a party. A female dating site became the law of the land with mandates, and lockstep went into lockdown. Trump played the Trump card, which is the Joker. The Trump card became the myocarditis. The trustee became the untrustee, always while someone was biding their time with dementia. And one leader teared out his pants and fled. Macron became a spike protein. Z, which means 11, became the new Yoashim and Boaz, as Putin was put in an awkward position as the UK reined him in. And Moscow went all mad cow, which was named after Pelosi. Pelosi became the world's first non-coherent Speaker of the House and was rearranged by name to Lie P.O.S. Piece of shit. They roamed the land in search of disciples who were disciplined in the art of compliance and servitude. As the US became not part of us, the UK became underknowledged, New Zealand becomes overzealous, the Germans became germ-infected, the French became frenetic, whilst the Dutch clogged everyone's arteries. Syria developed a serious infection via syringes from the sky. Sinai became the sin of AI, and Australia became the literal barrier reef. Some of them smoked it, whilst the rest were asked for the papers, please. Poland became the land of Po, with all the Teletubbies going beep. China developed yellow fever. Japan went all kamikaze, and Canada became infected with Candida. Canada, despite having a politician called Freeland, became anything but free. The Africans are dancing the Congo. Colombia got angry and became a bunch of narcs. Java became a defunct computer program. Austria became austerity. South Africa split apart. Hide and seek became their mode, and Brazil went nuts. The CIA became collecting in Afghanistan, the Taliban, everything except the poppy fields. The FBI became failed botched investigations, while some collected the moolah. The CDC became cardiac distressing clowns, where they then mixed in with the transgender program, and the CDC became the cross-dressing clowns. BLM became Biden loves mandates. Critical theory became clot theorem. The Pentagon became the pentagram. Argentina asked, where's the beef? And Crimea asked, is there a crime here? The world rocked and marvelled at the magic virus that came replete with a watch, a calendar, a tape measure, a flu inhibitor, and made people lack common sense and gave them a healthy dose of rank stupidity. Mass psychosis morphed into mass child abuse. Shakespeare reanimated as a pig and called himself Francis Bacon, whereby he rewrote Hamlet, to be jabbed or not to be jabbed? That is the question and the answer. The woke liberals complained because of the promotion of anti-vaxxers and requested equal rights for the uncle vaxxers. Experts lost their mutation and became just reps, selling lizard and snake oil to the masses, whilst the churches had their own masses to attend mass rituals. Pharma giants went from pushing their vials to just being vile. The band Rush rewrote their classic 2112 to include the Temple of the Syringes. Shane the Runer ruined himself. Alan went from cowl to scowl. And Randy's show went off planet, as there is no evidence it is on planet. Deborah went into a heap of fail. McKenny didn't learn to un-F herself. And Dawn Ham became Tin Man with no heart. Bubba went from massive and large to Minuscule and the Worship of the Tiny. Kim did her own version of the INXS song Disappear, as she disappeared everyone, including herself. Whilst Tank expanded everything from his eyes, his face, his body and his bank balance at the people's expense. Meanwhile, ISIS, Ra and El kept bombing, killing, shekel making and bringing more suffering to their own people. All whilst the people forgot to ask, where is the EpiPen theme? And it's all enough to make you commit fake suicide and flee to Tel Aviv. The world asked, who started it? The answer to the medical riddle is indeed, who? Who did start it? As room 101 became 201 via the gates of Babylon, where science became compliance, religion became rely on us. And when they were asked for a comment, the reply was, I don't give a Fauci. Bye for now.